Let the other to be great as well again. Let the Europe try to do the same. Mega, make Europe great again. That doesn't mean to wage the tale. It is the restoration, possible restoration of the European sovereignty, independence, geopolitical power. The same for Russia, the same for India. Make India great again. That better to It is better to do that in a peaceful way. For example, create Greater America, include Canada or Greenland, if they agree.
Now, the Western media loves to reference you as Putin's brain or Putin's philosopher. I prefer to refer to you as more Russia's philosopher. You've been into Russian politics and history for most of your life. And here we are today, probably one of the trickiest positions for Russia since the fall of the Soviet Union. So my first question to you, sir, is let's start focusing on President Putin. And the reason I want to focus a bit on President Putin is because we are in the midst of negotiations between President Putin and Trump. So before going to what led to the war, NATO's expansion and all other concerns that you and other Russians share, my first question is maybe tell the audience of what you can share about your relationship with Putin and slowly pivot to Putin's state of mind today compared to 2022 and compared to the 1990s.
So I think that it is a bit difficult for the Western audience to realistically evaluate my relations to Putin, because I am on a very big distance from him, and I always was. So I always was independent thinker with my own opinion, and the image of being too close, or maybe closest to him as anybody else, that is the result of the common involvement of Putin as political leader and myself as a thinker and philosopher in the logic of Russian history, in the logic of Russian geopolitics, and the logic of Russian identity. So Putin is deeply and absolutely Russian. So it is not, I am also. And we transmit our Russianness, our identity, our deep identity to rule the country in the case of Putin, or to think about the main challenges and the main horizons of the country in my case. And because we share with Putin the same concern, the same ontological concern about the destiny of our people, of our state, of our civilization, Russian civilization, and we understand with Putin more or less in equal terms the main features, the main foundations of Russia, that creates a kind of image that we are very, very close to him. Because I have described the future of Russia starting from the late 80s, during this Soviet Union's, giving my appreciation of what should happen and how, what we, in what direction we need to proceed, basing on the logic of Russian history, or on the geopolitics of heartland, of land power that I have discovered reading classical works on geopolitics. I have put all that together, the philosophy of Russian tradition, Christian Orthodox faith, and vision of the future, idea of the Antichrist as the Western perverted materialistic, atheistic civilization. And all that was a kind of the project, not just deploring of how we have lost our Holy Russia, but the idea to transform this nostalgia, this belief and a memory of our glorious past, to project that into the future. So that is both elements. So that was the kind of idea to project the Russian identity into the future. And I have spoken about that from the end of the 80s. And when Putin came, I have immediately recognized in him the person who will accomplish this project. But I have no special relations with him.
Can you expand on that project? When you say project Russian identity into the future, it's a pretty vague comment. And I know, you know, I've read your work when it comes to the concept of Eurasianism. And I want to ask you a question. So how has that mindset, so if you can expand on that quote you've just mentioned and explain how that mindset shifted from the 80s to where we are today. The world is changing. US presidents are changing. China has changed and their power has increased. Their influence has increased. The world has changed in so many different ways that I'm sure that mindset or that strategy or that project has changed since the 80s to today.
So first of all, my philosophy is based on recognition of the being of the eternity. Eternity does matter, in my opinion. Eternity is the dimension of the being. I'm a believer. I believe in God. I believe in the logic of the history. I believe in spirit. I believe in soul. So in my opinion, there is eternal values, eternal beings, eternal foundations of the world. And I think that our country and our people were chosen by God in order to accomplish some mission at a certain moment of the history. That was continuation of the heritage of the Byzantine Empire and the role of the figure that was evoked in the letters of St. Paul, Apostle St. Paul, about Katechon, about the keeper. The figure identified by Holy Fathers, Orthodox Christian Fathers, with emperor. So we have received from the Byzantine Empire after its fall the mission to keep Orthodox Christian faith and keep Christian Empire, Christian state until the last day. And that is a kind of eternal mission, eternal dimension, a mission that is not just about the past, but as well about the future until the last moment. And in that sense, all Russian history obtains the meaning. So we followed this line before the revolution. We gave totally perverted, heretical form to the same idea to fight against the degenerated West, and we have rediscovered the spiritual, religious mission after the end of the Soviet Union. So the end of the Soviet Union was interpreted in this context as the return of the Russia to its eternal roots. But in the 90s, there was the huge disaster. We went to the West, we have accepted liberal globalist values, and we have almost lost this sovereignty, the possibility to restart, to return to our, to accomplish our mission and to restart our history. And with Putin, that was precisely the moment where this miracle, historical and political miracle, has happened. We have returned to the history, and all the world around us as well changed. There was not only Russia as independent sovereign pole to oppose Western liberal globalist hegemony, but as well the other poles, for example, the China. But we fought the global liberalism, not so much West, And when Trump came to power, we have discovered that there is in the West another West inside of the globalist liberal West. There is totally different West, and I think that is great joy for Russian patriots to discover Trump's America. With such West, we could find a common principles, and I think that now we're in very special situation. We are following the same line, but the revolution is on your side this time. That I interpret Trumpism as conservative revolution. I've recently have written the book on Trump's revolution that should be published in English and simultaneously in Russian. So I explain how great in my eyes the revolutionary changes are in the West. There is no more liberal globalist West. There are two Wests. One, Trump's West, and the other, globalist, liberal, European, or Democratic Party, deep state West of previous administration.
This was a very interesting point, sir, because many in the West portray you as an anti-American, as a warmonger. But based on what you've just said, essentially, you don't oppose the US, and please correct me if I get it wrong, but you don't oppose the US, you oppose the concept of liberalism, and you want to protect Russian sovereignty. And what you're saying, under Trump, Russia is facing a new United States of America, which I would interpret, and this is in line with a post I put out. You know, I was interviewing Slovakia's Prime Minister, Prime Minister Fico, just a few days ago, and on that same day, I put out a post, an unpopular opinion, that essentially said that I believe in the foreseeable future, in my opinion, very, very soon, considering how fast President Trump is moving, and President Putin as well, I envisage an alliance between Russia and the new United States, a Trump administration. Would you agree with that statement? And is that essentially what you're hinting towards, that Russia does not see the US as an enemy, but saw the American values or America's attempts to instill those values among others as the issue?
So, generally, I agree. I agree with this vision. So, I never was against the West as such. I was against the liberal globalist West. There are different things. So, for example, when I observe now, what are the main critics of the Trumpists against deep state, globalism, and liberalism? It is the same arguments that were ours. So, and we see exactly when Trump declares that he is in favor of two gender only, not necessarily natural genders. They are two genders created by God. It's much more important than natural or socially defined. So these two genders, traditional values, patriotism, the love for the history, preserving identity of culture, of the people, justice, destruction of bureaucracy, transparency, accountability, the real and power of the people, all these elements we accept. And when we see what Trump is doing now with great speed, so very fast, so we that is a kind of the second miracle in our own history. In my opinion, the first miracle was the coming to power of President Putin, who has saved Russia from globalist liberal time. And now Trump is saving United States of America and maybe the whole Western world from the same catastrophe. So I think that now there is a moment when we share the same tendency of the defense of the identity, return to the traditional values, and more than that, Maybe we share the same project of the future. We need another future, not that the future imposed by globalists with their end of the history, this post-humanism, this degeneration of humanity. Our future could coexist, our projects of future could coexist, but at the same time we should not neglect the differences between our traditional values, because behind America there is your own history with special, much more Protestant Anglo-Saxon values. Behind us there is the foundation, the base of Christian Orthodox tradition. They were different. They don't coincide, but at the same time there is no such radical opposition between them as regarding comparing with liberal globalism, because liberal globalist agenda is anti-human, it's anti-Christ, anti-Christ agenda. That is total submission of the people to some very queer, weird norms, so-called norms that destroy total human nature. So we reacted against this. That was and there is our the ideological dimension of our war against the West, that our refuse to globalist liberal ideology. The people like Soros, the people like other globalists, they destroying and they oblige the other to destroy human dignity, and Trump is on our side in that war. So we need to reconsider, and very quickly, so we need to reconsider our relation with United States of America, with Trumpists America, because that is something different, that is something new and very much more closer to us than previous administration. Previous administration were the enemies of Russia. They were Russophobic. They hated the tradition, the normality, every traditional value. But now we see that new administration, it is totally different. It is not just variation of the previous administration, as was maybe in the first term of Trump. That is totally new direction. And to say the truth, I admire that.
That gives me hope. I think it gives me hope, because the way I interpret what you're saying is, you know, I'm a man of peace. And I always seek any solution that leads to peace. That's generally my state of mind whenever I approach any issue. And from what you're saying, you see a higher likelihood of peace in Europe based on the new administration, the new Trump administration. Obviously, a lot of it will also depend on the EU as well, but the EU's and the US, you know, the EU tends to follow the US, or at least if you go through by, you know, President Putin said something recently about European leaders will always come after Trump with their tails wagging. I'm not sure if you heard him say that quote a few weeks ago. There's this quote he said, but all of them, about the EU leaders, he said, Putin said, all of them will stand at the master's feet, referring to Trump, and gently wag their tails, which essentially means that Europe will follow whatever the US says or does. So my two questions to you, sir, is first, how important is Europe's stance when it comes to Russian relations versus America? Do you think the American relationship is, you know, by far more important than Europe? And the second question is, how big of a role do you think the American stance and what you call neoliberalism, how, and the liberal globalist agenda, how big of a role did that play in the war in Ukraine?
So I think that starting from second question, I think that liberal ideology played an essential role in the conflict in Ukraine, because Russia, as a sovereign power, was precisely the stronghold of traditional values with Putin. That was the civilizational state defending traditional values, faith, rejecting woke, DEI, or this gender politics, LGBT, and all the rest. And that was the enemy, ideological enemy of this global liberal ideology. There is the book of Karl Popper, who was the teacher of George Soros, and the famous book called Open Society. But a few people remark the subtitle, Open Society and Its Enemies. And who are the enemies of open society? Enemies of open society are everybody who doesn't share the liberal agenda. Everybody who dares to criticize liberalism or globalism is immediately qualified as enemy. And what you do with the enemy? You cancel them, you fight against them, you destroy them, you discredit them, you demonize them. So that was the ideological reason to start this war between globalist liberal West and traditionalist sovereign Russia. That was ideological reason. And Europe still tries to follow the same path. I think I don't see that the transition of the European Union in the direction of the Trumpist revolution will be easy. I think they will try to resist. They will try to continue warmongering processes against Russia. They already, the European globalist liberal leaders, they criticize Trump and they compare Trump with Putin. So they try to fight to fight against us, against you, against us. So they try to continue the war against us in Ukraine. They try to help Ukrainians to fight against us, and I think they will sabotage the Trump's effort to bring the peace. Now, European Union is the problem. It is headache both for us. For us, they still are enemies. So because they try to destroy us, to defeat us, to eliminate us. And that is the problem because this leader don't share the Trump's vision of the future, and this order of great powers advocated openly by J.D. Vance, by Elon Musk, by Trump. So we have that is kind of paradox. Now in Europe, United States of America and Russia, we have the same enemy, this globalist liberal elite that is against you and against us. And when we see whom we support, who was invited for Trump inaugurational event from Europe, they are the same populist, right, populist, conservative, traditionalist group that we supported. We supported for decades the people who wanted to make Europe great again. And we were blamed for that. There were so many hoax about that, how Putin interfered in the European elections and all that. All these wrong accusations were organized by Soros and other globalist network. And now we see that we have exactly the same powers and political movement in Europe that were invited to Trump and supported by Trump, and who are in favor of the peace with Russia. They don't want to continue this war. So we have many common points in Europe and outside of Europe, and I think that gives the hope for the future. Peace talk between Putin and Trump, and I think in these conditions, very, very special, very unique conditions of the balance of power and ideological tendencies in the new world after Trump's victory, give us the hope that we could bring finally the peace.
Talking about Russian interference in European countries, that was a pretext for the cancellation of the Romanian elections. I was talking to Calin Georgescu, who should have been president, just a few days ago. Direct question, sir. Did Russia interfere in Romania's elections? Because from what I've seen, didn't see any evidence.
There is no evidence. I have no information about that. And more than that, not you, but globalists, they overestimate or pretend to overestimate our capacity in influence anybody. So Putin has a control over our country with great support and sincere and open and full heart support of the population, of absolute majority of the population. But I think that the real power of Putin stops at our borders. Maybe we would like to have some populist leaders at the head of European countries. Maybe, for example, with Calin Georgescu, there was no such case, but we have invited before Marine Le Pen, AfD, the other the conservative groups and a political movement from Italy, for example, to Russia, but not in the case with Georgescu. So I think that is normal if we support morally, at least, or we are inviting someone we like from European politics, but that is not interference. And in the case of Romania, I am absolutely sure there was no, zero interference in Romanian elections. And we didn't pay attention, too much attention to Calin Georgescu. And I could make a kind of confession when he has won first stage of elections. The people from Kremlin have called myself to know who is it, who is this strange guy who has maybe by the chance I know him, but they were very, very, very surprised. So if there was a kind of planned interference, I doubt they would do that. So they would know. But and I have explained. I have some experience of Romania. There was my book published and translated in Romania. I have good contacts with some Romanian intellectuals of conservative line, many friends there. So I knew about Calin Georgescu, and I have explained after the day of election, not before, who was he. And he was very, very popular and very open, very sincere leader of Romania. Not absolutely not pro-Russian. He is pro-Romanian. He is just Romanian patriot. But for the globalists, all the patriots in all the countries in Europe or outside of Europe should be Putin's agents. So that is their conspiracy theory. They blame us that we believe in conspiracy theories, but they themselves are the worst believers in the conspiracy theories, and more than that, with the criminal conspiracy theories, with the stupid conspiracy theories, and they manipulate that. They manipulate the kind of confidence that global the masses still pay to their manipulated media. So Elon Musk has right to declare the war against legacy media, against the mainstream media, because they lie. They are using all psychological weak points of the population in order to promote their absolutely they dictatorship, they wrong and false agenda, and they blame us to do that. They do that, they interfere in the election, they try to manipulate mass consciousness. But when we do nothing at all, they blame us to do that. That is incredible. And I think that that is why X.com is so important. I am a great fan of that, because we need to replace such dictatorship of the small group of globalists with very crazy ideas about the global rule, global state, and so on. And we need to give the truth to the people and the liberty to express their opinions. So I am great fan. I think one of the of the billions of Elon Musk, now he is a kind of iconic figure of real freedom of speech fighter and much more.
Do you think, you mentioned X and how you're a fan of how X is displacing legacy media after Elon acquired it. Do you think X should be, the ban on X in Russia should be lifted, and you think it will be lifted now that there's peace negotiations between the US and Russia?
I am almost sure that it will be unbanned, so it will be restored. There is a kind of military aspect of that. Starlink serves as a main tool for Ukrainian forces to kill us. So the majority, the vast most majority of our losses are linked to the Starlink, because there is the way of secure and very effective communication of our enemies. I think that is much more than XCOM, but I think my suggestion was free it, to open it in Russia long before, notwithstanding this military aspect, but our government has different opinion on that. But I don't think we should think about X.com in the term of deal. So it is not about deal, it is about principle. And I agree with the main principle of the real freedom of speech and canceling of the cancel culture, the canceling of the censorship in the networks and the social services. That is the main idea of X.com. In my opinion, I would give permission just now, right now, to this social service, because it is works in our favor, because our idea is pursuit of the truth and not manipulation. And as long as I know, as I understand, the same reason is the driver of the X.com in general.
The discussion, as the discussion goes on, just gives me more and more hope of a new world where Russia and the US, Russia and NATO and Ukraine and Europe are at peace. And that could lead to potentially a multipolar world. But the concern there is that President Trump, who's seen as a president of peace, is also very focused, in some people's eyes, on US global hegemony and America first. And we saw that with his recent threats on BRICS, any members joining BRICS. So my question to you is, how do you think that world will look like, considering that Trump is looking at reaching a peace agreement with Russia, respects a lot of the Russian values, respects President Putin, and has respected President Putin for a while, but also is heavily focused on American hegemony, global hegemony?
So, in my opinion, multipolarity, and that is very important that Marco Rubio recently has accepted the fact that we are living in a multipolar world. Globalist liberals, they were furious against that. In all the conferences when I met the previous administration representatives on the international conference, they always were radically against multipolarity. They pretended to organize the world under their rule. Globalism is about that. It is not multipolarity, that is one world government in the hands of this deep state, this globalist mafia, internationalism. So they were against multipolarity. Now, if Marco Rubio, if United States accepts multipolarity, we have already won. We have already won together, so we accept the possibility of the existence of different centers of the decision. And we accept the possibility to the nations, the states, civilizational states, or the group of the states to follow their own agenda, to defend their sovereignty, and to affirm their interests and values. So I see no reason at all why in this multipolarity United States of America should not have leading role. So it is, you are the great country, the very powerful state, you have very brilliant society, very dynamic, you have weak side as anybody, but you have very, very powerful and very strong side in your history, in your psychology. So why not to become leading power? But there is the condition, one most important condition: let the other to be great as well again. Let the Europe try to do the same, mega, make Europe great again. That doesn't mean to wage the tail in the front of the American master. It is the restoration, possible restoration of the European sovereignty, independence, geopolitical power. The same for Russia, the same for India, make India great again. That was the slogan of Narendra Modi. We need to accept as well, for example, we have very good relations with Great China. We consider China as very important pole in the global politics, and we respect them, we have very good relations with them. I think Trump has different opinion, and maybe he is a bit afraid of the BRICS because of the role of China. That is, I agree, one of the central role in this alternative organization of multipolarity. But let us define the conditions, the balances inside of multipolar worlds in the competition. For example, Trump proposes American hegemony. I see nothing wrong in American hegemony, but you need to prove you are capable for that. It is better to do that in a peaceful way. For example, create greater America, include Canada or Greenland if they agree, or if majority at least agree. So we have nothing against that, but we defend as well our right to do the same, to make great again, to reinforce our security, to preserve and grant our safety. So maybe there will be conflicts. That is normal. But we need to accepting the right to everybody to be great again. We should accepting this right, we need to use all our power to decide the problem peacefully. So avoid the conflict, avoid the war, because where the war is possible, the peace is possible. We need to remember that realist saying. So you could not create the world without possibility of war. So because without war, no peace. But the differences and multipolarity doesn't mean necessary absence of peace. It is not necessary clashes. It is not necessary wars. It could be peaceful coexistence coexistence of the great powers. All that, but the real structure, a real picture, real architecture of this new multipolar world depends on our capacity to be on the level of our claims. So let everybody try to establish their hegemony, but the balance of the power will show who is the leader, who is the second one, who is the third one, or we could conclude some basic rules respecting each other that nobody should overcome or transgress. I think this multipolarity could be seen from different angles, from American angles, from Chinese, from Russian, from Indian, from European, but we need to take in consideration all the opinions, all the standpoints, and try to reconcile them, because that will be the real universalism when we hear everybody participating. That the same multipolarity is embedded in X.com project. There is not only one power that dictates to everyone how they should think. Think as you is thinking. Think as you want. Say whatever you want, that will be the rule, that will be the beginning of the mutual hearing and understanding.
Look, I'm a believer in decentralizing power. So I think on a global scale, decentralizing power by having more than one empire kind of removes the risk of having one country or even one president or one leader be able to control an entire planet, which is probably the most dystopian outcome. But historically, sir, we've seen, in theory, a multipolar world makes sense. But historically, having more than one empire generally leads to war. Doesn't that concern you that having, you know, a Chinese empire, a Russian empire, an Indian empire, an American empire could lead to a lot of overlap and eventually lead to conflict? And one could argue even Ukraine is a result of that. Russia's trying to establish its own influence, its own sphere of influence. NATO was trying to do the same with the US and expand it eastwards. And that led to the Ukraine war, as two powers are trying to establish their influence.
So not necessarily the world of empires immediately means conflicts. For example, there was such situation when there existed different empires before Columbus. Empires. There was the Ottoman Empire, Russian Empire, Austro-Hungarian Empire in the Europe, Chinese Empire, the great Indian states, and some African states as well. There existed a kind of African empires, something like that, or Indochina Empire, Japanese Empire. So the world of empires doesn't mean necessarily war between them. They coexisted. The conflicts could happen between everybody. But when the order of empires was exchanged by orders of the national state, national colonial state, the wars between these national states were much, much bigger, much more radical, much more savage than among the empires. So I think when globalists came, they declared there will be universal peace, there will be no national states, there will be one government, there will be nothing, and they immediately started the war against those who didn't accept their rule. So no political system, no geopolitical system could grant absolute peace. It is unrealistic. So the conflicts, the war, they are possible. And we are speaking not about the war or peace or war. We are speaking about what international order should be there. And I think the war in Ukraine was not about to secure for Russia our zone of influence, but that was the kind of our response against aggressive aggressive strategy of the globalists, of the liberals. They have artificially created neo-Nazi regime in Ukraine. They prohibit any kind of nationalism and patriotism in their own countries, but they make an exception. They made an exception for Ukraine because they hated us so much. That was totally, totally artificial case. So we could have good relations with independent sovereign Ukraine, or with the condition they should stay neutral, at least not hostile. But the globalists in Washington and Brussels, they ignited this hatred to us artificially. So they have transformed Ukrainian population in the kind of fanatics who hated Russia with no reason at all. That was totally, totally artificial. And that was purely ideological psychological operation organized by Soros, by networks of globalists against us and against Ukrainians themselves. That was not a kind of zone between European empire or Western empire and Russian empire, because that was the if there will be the case, I think relations could be solved much easier. So, for example, everybody respect some red lines posted by two sides, and we could logically until the last developments, we could solve the problem, because Ukraine was not before this conflict, this war started, was not totally Russophobic as today. That was the result of special operation organized by globalists, and they should be responsible for that. And I think that, but at the same time, the multipolarity about which we are speaking now never existed as such. We had a national state, Westphalian system, we had bipolar world, we had unipolar moment, as Charles Krauthammer has said, but multipolar world order, it's something new, and it demands our imagery, our imagination. It demands our projects, our thought oriented to the future. We need to imagine first this multipolar world and include in our imagination or our hope, desires, moral values. If we agree on this imagined plan, we will receive finally correct results that would satisfy everybody.
Interesting. First, it's just fascinating, and I've spoken to three world leaders in the last week and a half, and all of them have mentioned Soros' influence. You know, it just fascinates me how deep his influence has been around the world. And when you brought it up, it also caught me by surprise. I do want to talk about a world where the US and hopefully the EU respect Russian security concerns and Russia's values and sovereignty. In that world, would Russia not invade any more countries, including any other former Soviet nations? And how would Russia be able to instill their influence within those countries? Or is that not in Russia's best interest, in your opinion, to really try to instill a certain level of influence in the border countries?
So I think, for example, now it is easy to explain what are the means to acquire Canada and Greenland for Trump now. So there are many, many tools, many, many ways to do that. Financial, tariffs, politics, ideology, money, maybe some influence, some power. And what is important? That is not important, good or wrong, these means to accomplish the idea, but what works and what doesn't work. So that is important. So I think that there are so many effective ways to acquire what you desire outside of direct military intervention that I think that everybody has all the right to use that. Soft power,
okay.
Influence, attraction. For example, if Russia will be prosperous, free, sovereign, developing, it will act as a pole and of attraction for the other ex-Soviet states. Without violence, without military intervention, we could achieve our goals in many ways, and we need to find the correct ones. That's all.
Wouldn't that go against your values when it comes to sovereignty for all those nations, being able to maintain their sovereignty? So do you understand that contradiction, which, like, I understand where you're coming from. I understand where President Trump is coming from, and I respect that you drew your line between soft power and military intervention. But yeah, I want to get your thoughts on having, you know, that is a concern that a lot of these neighboring countries have, and one reason they've joined NATO. What are your thoughts on that, and the risk of jeopardizing their sovereignty and their values?
So first of all, I think that multipolarity as the project is based on the distinction between so-called sovereignty, that is hypocrisy, and the real sovereignty. Real sovereignty, that is capacity to stand, to defend, to affirm, and to secure your own total and absolute independence in front of the all possible threats. That is the definition of the real sovereignty. And I think only the poles, the great powers of, as the main actors of civilizational states, main actors of multipolar world order, could afford to do that. All the rest, the small countries, the small peoples, the small ethnical groups, should find their way to exist in this multipolarity, preferring one pole or other, or maybe to create a kind of frontier between civilizational states with special legal status. We need to think on that, because the borders between civilizational states shouldn't be the same as between national states. That is not about lines, that about zones, a kind of zones with some depth. Because we could not, in many cases, we could not say, here ends one civilization and here begins the other civilizations. They penetrate in each other. They are so many complex identities. And we need to act very careful with them. So where the Latin America ends and United States of America begins, it is not on the border, because there are so many Latin America in the south of United States. So the same for all the regions. So we need to treat the problem very careful. When we need to secure our identity, and that should be one of the main concern of multipolarity, to reinforce the identity of the pole and to grant and to save and to conserve the core identity. But at the same time, the pole should attract and should deal very carefully with these frontiers around it. So, and the sovereignty, we could not grant sovereignty for the small countries precisely because they could not stand the real threat from the bigger poles, and so they should have their guarantees of the peace by the poles. The poles should say, this zone, this frontiers is based on our mutual agreement. They will be free to develop their own culture, to defend their moral values, because we should grant them, basing on our mutual agreement. For example, Russia and the European Union, when it will be liberated from globalists, we could can a kind of great agreement about Eastern Europe, because Eastern Europe identity is half Christian Orthodox, half Slavic, not so much the same as German, French, Italian, and so on. The Eastern Europe always was the special zone, and we should make a kind of agreement to grant to the people and the culture in this zone, this area, to defend and to conserve their own special identity, so-called Greater Eastern Europe project, based on the agreements, and the other poles should participate in that as well, putting their power, their amount of their political and diplomatical cultural richness as the guarantee for these frontiers.
Interesting. I don't want to oversimplify your stance on the matter, but and I don't want to put words in your mouth either, but would you say you're advocating more for Russian influence in the Eastern Bloc? Or would you advocate, if those countries choose so, to Russia try to influence those countries to join Russia as a country? Similar to what President Trump is doing with Greenland people dispute whether he's being serious or not, but potentially with Canada.
So I think that depends. We should not make from that the kind of principles. So there is the frontier. Eastern Europe is frontier. For example, Orban Fico from Slovakia, maybe Kalinjer Jesko, maybe some other Eastern European leaders, they have nothing against to make a good alliance and establish friendly relations with Russia. So we have no reason at all to annex them, to put them inside of Russia, if they, maybe in some situations, they would declare they will to do that. We could accept, as there was the case in many, many situations in Russian history. Some peoples, Georgia, for example, Georgian state, under threat of the Iranian and Turks, they have asked us to accept them inside of Russia empire, as well the Cossacks from Ukraine. So there could be situation when some country, some state would apply a kind of plea to enter in the Russia, or enter in the United States, or enter in the European Union, or newly re-established. And that is always a possibility. Or they could prefer to stay neutral, to be just frontier, to conserve their two-side loyalty, to be the bridges between, for example, one civilization and the other civilization. The same for example, many Islamic area, they could prefer to stay neutral between Russia and, for example, Turkey or China and India, or in a different way. So it is about frontiers, but we need to define very correctly the sovereignty. It should not be hypocrisy anymore. We need to accept the sovereignty belongs to the great powers. That is precisely what Trump has in view in his realistic strategy in international affairs, international relations. So let's recognize the reality. So sovereignty, it is about great power. All the other should inscribe in the balance of this. Great powers and multipolarity gives many, many chances for them. So you could apply to one pole, to the other pole, to balance between them, you could save your independence, but not sovereignty. Independence based on the sovereignty of the great powers and agreement between them. So that is how I see that.
But could sovereign nations, and I know we've reached the time, and I've only gone through like 5% of my questions, so I think we're going to have a much longer discussion in Russia. But do you think those countries could, is it fair to say those countries could maintain their sovereignty? They're a sovereign nation, they're a legally sovereign country. Could they maintain that sovereignty by essentially having allegiance to either Russia or the US or both, as well as we've seen with other, you know, superpowers like India, who's maintained a good relationship with both Russia and the US? So is that a fair way to characterize where you stand on the matter? And would you also draw a line on military intervention by the US, by Russia, in terms to kind of force those countries to prescribe to their values or to be allied with those countries? So essentially, whether US intervening in Ukraine allegedly through the Maidan Revolution or Russia invading Ukraine, would you try to draw these red lines for both the US, Russia, China, India to avoid military intervention?
I think yes. I think yes. I think that the appeal to the military power is the worst. We should avoid that at any price. But we should be very, very responsible in front of the history. Sometimes there are moments that it is inevitable. For example, if we consider acceleration of the conflicts with the Mexico, with narco cartels, for example, US intervention in Mexico could happen if the situation with the narco traffickers will be worse. So we shouldn't exclude the military in international by intervention by principle, but we should create the conditions to minimize this possibility and to create the kind of agreements, mutual agreements, three parts, four parts, two parts agreements in order to reduce the risks. So, but in to do that, we need to take in consideration position of other. We should not say you should be like that, like me, like Russians, like United States. No, we should ask the other subject, other actor in the international relations. What do you think? If not, we should not replace what we presume he should, it should think, but we need to ask, we need to hear, we should be flexible. I think the multipolar world order should be flexible based on the translation, correct translation of the will, desire, values, interest, to understand each other, and that will create a totally new atmosphere in international relations that is absolutely impossible in this liberal globalist dictatorship. Because liberals know better than you what America should be, better than us, Russians, what Russia should be. They say transgenders, LGBT, human rights, DEI, that is universal law. Follow it, that is the progress. It's all. So, no peace, and we will rule, and Soros networks should dominate all place in the humanity. That is absolutely unacceptable, I think. That provokes the revolt, the rebellion of all peoples against this dictatorship of the internationalists and their claim to know better than us what is universal and what is best for us.
My last question for you, sir, is where do you see the world in the next 10 years? But I want you to kind of explain that in two parts. Hypothetical world if Trump did not win, and the current state of the world under a Trump presidency, and let's say the next president is J.D. Vance or someone else aligned with Trump's values. Where do you see the world in both scenarios?
So I have described that in my article in published as well in the United States in Man's World, it seems to me. So when it wasn't clear who will win, who would win, that was before Kamala Harris has replaced Biden. I've tried to imagine this future world with Biden as president or something like him. And the only thing that I could see in the future ahead of us, that was nuclear destruction of the humanity, because the globalists, they would provoke a nuclear war with us, and not maybe a war between China and Taiwan. They will support the war between Greater Israel and Iran, and I have seen in front of us, if globalists stay at power in the United States, in the West, on the global level, only destruction of humanity and Mad Max landscapes, something like that. So post-apocalyptical future. When Trump has come to power, and when Trumpism, more than that, Trumpism, totally new team with Elon, with Kash Patel, Tulsi Gabbard, Robert Kennedy, Pete Hexit, and all the other, Pam Bondi, Caroline Leavitt, all this Homan, all these strange persons coming to Trump's, that the G8 events, they have given the opinion of the alternative future. The alternative future is possible based precisely on the global great powers order. So there could be conflicts. Always there could be conflicts, maybe war, but the distribution of decision making and recognition of the diversity of the identities and civilizational states gives the humanity the chance to develop, to keep peace, and to start the real dialogue between civilizations, not clash as Huntington has predicted, but dialogue and the kind of talks between civilizations in order to redefine the new future, accepting this diversity of the humanity and conserving traditions, values, religions, world visions of different peoples. That is the chance. I think Trump is the chance. And Trumpism is a chance still more than Trump himself.
Alexander Dugin, one thing that fascinates me whenever I speak to someone that is hated by Western media is first the way they've portrayed by legacy media and reality, as we've seen in this discussion, and also the amount of similarities that the West and yourself and Russians have. That happened with me in this discussion today, happened with me with, you know, you mentioned Prime Minister Fico, same thing. Kalin Georgescu, same thing. And the list goes on. Mateos as well, former Prime Minister. So it gives me a lot of hope as well to see that a lot of the values that you've mentioned are shared by the West, are shared by the majority of Americans that voted for Trump, and in my opinion, shared by a growing minority or majority in many European countries. So it's been an incredible discussion. As I said, I've only gone through maybe 5% of my questions. So we're going to be having a much longer discussion in Russia face-to-face. I can't wait for that discussion. But otherwise, sir, it's been an incredible discussion. I really appreciate your time. I'm again sorry for your loss. The photo in the background is a good reminder of the ugliness of war. And I appreciate your time again, sir. Thank you so much.